15-day Lunar New Year is still being celebrated, and this is part two of our look at Asian customs surrounding the New Year. I'm Noel Debien, and you're on ABC Radio around Australia and on your pod, and this is The Good Life. The origins of this New Year or Spring Festival are so ancient they're difficult to pin down exactly historically, but it is true to say that about a fifth of the world population celebrates it annually, and that means over a billion people. Last episode, we focused on particular Chinese customs surrounding the New Year, food, charity, awareness of family. This week, we're focusing on the Christian Protestant minority of China and how their particular view of the good life and the way to lead it fits in to the emerging Chinese nation. And this year, from a Chinese Christian leader. Chinese-born Dr. Ji Zhang is the Uniting Church's newly appointed Manager of Church Partnerships in Asia. I began by asking him about his most recent visit to China, and more precisely how he experienced the Chinese Protestant Christians there at the beginning of this new year.
I was in China 2 weeks ago, visiting people and friends. I attended a service and shared some stories with a congregation of 9,000 people.
9,000?
Yes.
That's a big congregation.
Oh, they're bigger than that. Because the land is so small, they have to build upwards. I think it's about 9 floors.
9-floor church?
Yeah. 7 floors for worship. And I can see about 4 floors from where I stand. Then another 3, they can see me, I can't see them. They watch me on the video screen. I was told some people, old people, to get front seats. They have to come about 2 hours earlier.
So it's great enthusiasm you're watching.
Yeah.
And great engagement from Chinese Christians.
It is. In some ways, as a Christian minister, I still try to put my mind around who has made this happen. And the church has grown. It's grown so rapidly. There was a figure spoken by Bishop Ding. Now he just passed away.
He was the Protestant Bishop Ding who survived the Cultural Revolution. Yes. Famous man. Yeah.
60 years of leadership of the church, brought the church to the world. And he described that between the 80s and the 90s, every 2 days, there are 3 churches either reopened or newly built.
Ooh.
And now there are 70,000 church or gathering places.
Is this an official number, 70,000? Because it's very rubbery, the figures in China. Are there 23 million Christians? Are there 90 million? It's very hard to know.
I asked this question when the General Secretary of China Christian Council came to visit last July. He said that number is a good indication, but they don't run the system like in Australia. In my church, we run the baptismal register system.
So you keep a record of who's being baptized.
We keep a report. Yeah. But over there, there's so many people newly baptized. For example, the church we visited 2 years ago, they baptized about 250 adults only. Every baptism service, they do about 2 to 3 each year. If we use that system, it's very hard to keep track. Chinese people are very practical. They just simply count how many people turn up to the church this Sunday. So the reality is that number is far more truthful than the one we keep.
In the 1950s, we're talking in the last 60-odd years since the revolution in China, there were clergy imprisoned, churches closed down, Christianity as well as Islam, as well as Buddhism, all religion was discouraged very firmly by the government.
Yeah.
So we're looking at a renewal which has come from a very low base as well, aren't we?
There's an image for that. It derives from a Chinese proverb. It is called bamboo shoots after spring rain.
Bamboo shoots after spring rain.
Yeah. If you have lived in China or in southern part of Asia, you literally can hear their growth because the bamboo emerge out of the ground from the roots. Then hundreds of them after rain, you can see the cracking sound.
There's a cracking sound?
Oh, yeah.
You've heard this?
Yeah. If you listen really carefully, because it grows so fast, it just shoots out of the
color. Bud.
And it's that sort of illustration.
This is how you see the church in China now?
Yeah, very much so.
What do you feel when you look at Australian congregations by comparison? There must be quite a contrast.
It is, it is. The congregational form of the church in not only Australia, but throughout Europe, in some parts of the world, they are shrinking. That's the fact. But that does not mean the churches in other parts of the world not growing. In 1910, when the modern ecumenical movement started, Christianity, its population in global south, was less than 20%. And today the figure is like, in global north, the figure is below 40 now. The figure in global south, the exact figure actually is 63.8%. So we see a major shift of Christianity away from North Atlantic towards Asia, Pacific, and Africa. That's the reality.
This is where the growth is. This is where you go and preach to 9,000 people for 8:30 service. Yeah.
I wonder, you talk about the change in values that's happening within China, the breakdown of traditional values, effectively, because the modern world is just pushing things along, as it were. The church that you're observing, does it have a role to play in that?
Oh, yeah, I think huge, huge role. Give you a figure about urbanization. In China, when I left, the figure I knew always in my mind is 80%+ of people living in the country.
What year are we talking? When did you leave? You left, I think, just after Tiananmen?
This is my 22nd year in Australia. Within that period, the figure is published this last year was 52% of people living in cities. And towards the end of this decade, another 7 years away, they're predicting it will go to 60%. This is the largest migration movement ever in human history.
And in fact, Chairman Mao's ideal in the 50s and 60s of getting, you know, all of the good communist cadres to go and work in the country, to work in the fields, to get a sense of what it is to be a genuine peasant.
Yeah.
This is turned upside down because we're all building cities and the migration is going in the opposite way.
That's right. The modern economical system unfortunately produced mega cities. Shanghai, for example, the place I grew up, 23 million people.
Well, they're very huge social changes when you say that
massive.
From 80% in the country to less than 50% living in the country villages. Yeah. That's a huge change in life.
Yeah.
And there is, again, I think, you know, not to gild the lily, but a place for the church to assist in this, I imagine.
Yes, very much so. There are three areas we are seeking to do. The first area is theological education. To sustain a church of 23 million people needs a lot of trained ministers. But there's a great, great shortage.
So you're saying there's a shortage of ordained trained ministers in China right now?
Yeah.
Even though the congregations are large, the ministers are missing.
Yeah. Not only that, also teachers. There's not enough teachers to teach them.
Well, it strikes me that if you've got a church where there is a relative lack of educated leadership among Christians, then you're likely to get biblical fundamentalists everywhere, aren't you? People with the Bible, interpreting it quite literally.
If we're really looking at the pattern of Christianity and its development, what often compare is the church in China now, it gives me some resonance about what church developed in the early church period. People gathered first through their house groups, then through gathered community, and when people live their life, gradually become recognized.
So you're seeing it as a stage of development which is natural and we've seen before in the early church, in other words.
Very much so.
So it's spreading by word of mouth, through families, through small communities.
The term I use is a lived faith. MIT Foundation started its printing press in 1985. From the Bible societies around the world come to support them. We visit that place. They become the largest non-profit organization run by the church to serve the poor, the needy, and people neglected through the fast economical growth.
So you're saying that there is a tremendous need for the social arm of the church to be
That's
working
right.
in China currently?
That's exactly the second part of our future cooperation we look into is the social service.
So not only ministers needing to be trained, but now social service and what the church can do for those who are left out of the economic miracle, as it were.
When they come to visit Australia, they visit Uniting Care facilities. So positive about how the church achieve a wonderful, high standard social care network throughout Australia.
It strikes me that in the China that's emerged post-communist, that civil society is naturally going to be weak. There's not going to be civil society because it was all government, and the churches are sitting there as perhaps the only significant organs of civil society outside what used to be government.
Well, in some ways it is true, because that's not only happening in China, it's throughout the capitalist world. Someone once said, one of the famous missiologists said, capitalism produced Christianity simply because capitalism is a very selfish worldview. The church I visited 2 weeks ago, they have care for legal advice for people going through difficult time to know where they stand.
So they're giving legal advice?
Yeah, for example, some people getting divorced, simple as that. Or they have land disputes or property issues or something very simple. You hit someone in the street. They are the doctors, either retired or still working, they're members of the church, nurses. They go to visit communities, provide free Medicare to the people, especially the area desperately in need. And they provide community support for families, because families are changing so much.
Right.
The church is stepping in to say, what is this family value? Why does society, so many people get divorced? That never happened in our culture, but now it can become. How does the church deal with AIDS? How do they deal with people who are neglected?
You're talking now in modern China that the church is moving into areas which we've seen in other countries, medicine, education, legal assistance, social help and support. These are the areas that the church in China is developing.
Yeah, the government actually encourages the church to be involved in social services. And the church also recognizes its role in the public life. And it's a gradual shift from personal salvation and from that base towards social service.
Now, there were three things, though, because you mentioned ordained ministry and training was something that was needed. Social service was something that was developing. What's the third thing?
Ongoing dialogue. How to hold 23 million together as a unity, as a harmonious unity. And Uniting Church is the only post-denominational church in this country.
Well, it's very interesting, though, now that you draw that point, that, of course, under the communist system, all of the Protestant churches, whether they were Presbyterian or Methodist or Anglican, they were all put together and told, now you're the Christian church. So in a sense, there was a forcible amalgamation in China, which is the fact they have now. Yet the Uniting Church in this country freely decided to do this, to amalgamate.
Yeah. There are similarities and also difference. The unity of the church in China, which is called the Three Self Church.
And Three Self Patriotic Church, I remember.
That's right. Yeah, Three Self Patriotic Movement. The part of the missionary movement in China stopped in 1952. Basically, there's a...
This is the foreign missionary movement.
Yeah,
52, it was all
it's
over.
It's all exodus. Okay. So what has left is three vacuum areas. One is finance. The second is leadership. The third is administration.
Because these are the three things the missionaries took away with them. There's no incoming money. All the experts who were foreign who'd been there had to leave.
Yeah. So to survive through this massive historical change, you come to share everything you can and bond together as a family. That does not mean it's a complete denial of other traditions. For example, the churches we visit, they still keep very much the liturgy of Anglican tradition.
Also, you can still experience the denominational difference, as it were.
Yeah. And the Baptists, they will still do full immersion. And also, there are some Pentecostal churches, they will have a far more modern worship style. So you still have different denominational heritage. they come together, share a common identity called post-denominational church. They use that term, actually.
Dr. G, thank you very much for being part of The Good Life.
Thank you.